everybody. Welcome to another edition of Shamanic Reality. I'm your host, Mark Johnson, and this is our second episode, and this is where we take a very unique, different look at our world around us, seen through the eyes of the shamanic practices. And as I mentioned before, I've gone through some shamanic practitioner training. I am not a shaman. I don't claim to be one. I never will be one. This is just my way of examining the world from a different point of view that I find personally fascinating. And so I have a guest for tonight. And to introduce my guest, we're speaking tonight with Karen Furr. Now, Karen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I had the pleasure of attending a class with Karen a while back, and we definitely are going to be talking about that subject during tonight's show. But Karen, could you, just for the listeners, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Oh, sure. Well, actually, you can check me out on my website at spiritdrum.org. And you can go there and learn about me. But I'm 68 years old. I've had an extraordinary life. In the context of that, I've been a nun. I'm currently a Catholic priest in the independent Catholic movement. I'm a shamanic practitioner. I rescue dogs, and I live in the desert Southwest. I have a master's degree in social work, and that was part of my ministry for many years. I worked extensively with abuse survivors, domestic violence survivors, women and children who are fleeing really desperate situations. The work that I do now is, besides being a priest, my healing work is primarily within the shamanic context. I am a Reiki master also, and I incorporate that in my practice. I teach shamanism. Mark was in my class last year, and I love life, and I'm glad to share that with whoever is listening.
Now, one question I would have for you, and I'm sure some people in the audience would have for you, being that you are you're a former member of the Franciscan Sisters of the Poor, and you've been ordained in a priesthood with the Independent Catholic Church, not to be confused with the Roman Catholic Church. How would you tell people who might think that there's a conflict there in terms of coming from things from a Catholic Christian background and coming from a shamanic background?
Well, my background is not only the Jesus path. I mean, I have wandered through many traditions in my 68 years. And what I've learned is that at the core of each one of those traditions, it's all the same. There is no difference. There is no separation. And as we're in a new paradigm of oneness, I think more and more people are starting to experience that. I know when I was a Catholic nun, I was called into shamanism. I've had initiations. I mean, it was just a very powerful time in my life. And I had to ask myself the same question that you're asking me. How does that fit? And what I came to understand was that it's myself that had drawn the distinctions between this tradition and that tradition. I'm the one that decided that there's separation. I'm the one that decided that, you know, I came into Christianity the second time around very fundamentalist. And I had the mindset, you know, God said it, I believe it, that settles it, you know. And but I'm the one who did that, not you know, God as we know God, and, you know, the source of all being. So, you know, my life to me has been a blessing that I went through all of that so that I am at a place where I'm really comfortable at anybody's table, because it's at the core, at the most important part of our faith traditions and our spiritual traditions, there is no separation. And, you know, a lot of people are experiencing that today because, like I said, we're in this new paradigm and all of these institutional things really aren't working like they used to. I mean, do you understand, you know? And I get a lot of calls from people and there's a basic underlying question. You know, I'm having these experiences. Am I going crazy? And it's like, no, you're not. You're just awakening. And so many people are letting go of the institutional churches, institutional educational systems, institutional governments. I mean, look at the chaos we're in right now with our government. And because we are realizing there's something else, there's something more expansive to those traditions than what we were taught. And so, to me, there's no separation. It's all at the most important. It's all the same thing.
Well, that's what drew me towards learning mm-hmm. more about shamanism as well.
Yeah.
Because I've always been attracted to first Native American philosophy and spirituality, but also just in general different cultures around the world who all mm-hmm. have shaman roots in terms mm-hmm. of dealing with the spirit world or dealing with other energies that we look at, and modern science and modern religion, everybody looks down on it thinking, oh, it's primitive pagans, they don't know what they're doing, and it's all bunk, and yet what they don't realize is they're more in touch with reality, as I call it, than mm-hmm. we are.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, as you were saying that, I just had this thought. It would have been extraordinary had the early spiritual people, the early shamans or medicine people, whatever, if they had taught the rest of the community how to do that and not kept it an exclusive thing. You know, back in the old indigenous cultures, there was that one or two people in the community, and they were the ones that were in touch with the spirit world far more than the rest of the community members. And wouldn't it have been great if they could have just, you know, got everybody together and said, I'm going to teach y'all how to journey, or I'm going to teach you how to, you know, and really opened it up, because that's what's happening today. You know, it used to be, and I'll use the Christian tradition, it used to be hundreds of years ago that, you know, there were some saints and they were totally in touch, you know, and then there was the rest of humanity. Well, that's shifted. We are all called to that depth of spirit now. You know, we're all called to realize and recognize and walk in what can seem like the multiple realms, you know.
Well, and it seems to me that a lot of indigenous cultures, the people in general, were more in touch with the spiritual types of energies or the different types of realities that mm-hmm. Are out there. Mm-hmm. But you're still right in that most of these societies only had a couple of people who dealt with and interacted with these realms on behalf mm-hmm. of the people. Where today, it's more of a personal journey. In fact, I always look at that as spiritualism in general.
Yeah.
And even religion, I mean, especially organized religion, you have your hierarchy in the religion in Roman Catholicism. You have the Pope mm-hmm. and the cardinals and bishops and everybody that come down below that, I mean, down to the priests. And then the regular average person still has to look up to the priests as being more on high, connected to God. And that's not true, you know.
That is so not true.
Yes, especially now in the modern Catholic Church and the problems they're having.
Yeah, yeah. You know, our church doesn't do that at all. When I was asked to consider being the pastor of our small community, my response was, I will do the sacramental ministry, but this is your parish. And I have a complete non-hierarchical viewpoint of priesthood and what that means. As a matter of fact, and I'll just, you know, in our mass on Sundays, as the presider, there's a, for you Catholics out there, you'll relate to this, but there's a point in the Mass where the presider or the priest consecrates the bread and wine, and then through transubstantiation, blah, 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 that becomes the body and blood of Jesus, you know. And I ask everyone to pray that prayer with me. So it's not me doing some hocus pocus thing. It's the community itself that through intention of entering into a sacred moment, that's what happens. So, you know, there are Catholic movements out there that are, that love the Eucharist, but don't do the hierarchy. Hmm.
And I grew up in a Presbyterian church, and mm-hmm. pretty much in my 20s, I started moving away from that because I just wasn't feeling that connection and being drawn more towards a spiritual and the shamanic path. Mm-hmm. And even though I've stepped off that path several times in my life for many years, and now within the last couple of years, I've really been trying to get back back to my roots, I should say,
mm-hmm.
And learning more about it, and especially with the with learning through the shamanic healing practices.
Yes,
mm-hmm. And now you are a shamanic healer, and how long have you been working as a shamanic practitioner?
Oh, I would say probably since, well, the first time I actually knew what it was right around 2000.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been doing this my whole life, you know, connecting in ways that people around me thought I was kind of nuts. You know, it's just been kind of a lifelong path.
Mm-hmm.
I entered the Franciscans back in 1980, 79 and 80. So I was a nun for almost 20 years before I could at least label the direction that my life seemed to be going in. And someone at one time said, well, Karen, maybe you should check out shamanism because it seems like that's what you're doing. And so I looked up what it meant. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to really explore this, I need to at least do something about that. So I signed up for a workshop with Dr. Harner on basic journeying, and had an extraordinary experience during that time. And it felt like coming home. And it was in that initial workshop that I realized that this is what Jesus was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just fit. It just fit. Oh, wonderfully.
No, there's the Wikipedia or Webster's definition of what shamanism is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a relatively newer word in the English language.
Right.
But what does shamanism mean to you in terms of its definition?
It's going to be broader than some of the more traditional shamanic understandings. You know, shamanism, as you know, is a system of direct revelation, which means that we have direct access to source and we don't need to go anywhere else to get that.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus taught that. The realm of divinity, the kingdom of God is within you. When you want to pray, when you want to commune with God, go in. In scripture, it says, go into your closet and close the door. Beautiful metaphorical languaging.
Yes.
And there you will meet that source. You know, the Holy Spirit is within you. He said it all, you know, just every day he was telling us that we don't need the temple to get to God. And I think that's what really got him into a lot of trouble with the people that were maintaining temples back then.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you can imagine.
They knew they were going to be out of a job.
Yeah. So for me, shamanism is that direct access to source. Now, within that, once we recognize that we have that direct access, we don't have to go looking for it anywhere. It is within. What that frees us to experience then is the connection with helping spirits, the connection with the unseen world, the connection with the entire cosmology. And so all of those other things that people say this is what shamanism is or isn't, it's all within that umbrella of we have direct access to source. And for each person, that's going to be different. That's going to be experienced different because, you know, in the beauty of our oneness, we are also unique. And that's the gift that we bring to that oneness, is that aspects, the multitude of aspects. And so it's going to be experienced differently, person to person. I was in Sandra Ingerman's training on soul retrieval, and I cannot recall for the life of me what we were talking about that afternoon, but one thing she said, and I have never forgotten it, she said, you know, your practice is going to look different from everybody else's. And what I'm teaching you is the ground, the foundation of it. But your helping spirits are going to work with you and teach you how to do it so that it's unique to you. It may look similar, but there will be something unique about it. And that was like somebody pouring cold water over my head. It was just a wake up. A sudden wake up, because up until then, all the trainings I was receiving was that you have to do it exactly this way. And if you're not doing it exactly this way, then you're not doing shamanism. And that to me, you know, looking at it from a Jesus perspective, Jesus was not that confining. You know, he said, I have come not to, you know, do away with the law, in quotes, but to set you free. You know, go explore what it is to be a human being. Go explore what it is to be a spiritual being. Wherever that exploration leads, it's okay. Because in John in his gospel said it very clearly. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then he goes on to say that Jesus is that Word. And that nothing comes into being, nothing was created that did not first come through that Christ consciousness. And so every tradition on the face of the planet, even Christianity, surprise, surprise, had its origins in that Christ conscious reality. And so, this was part of my homily this past Sunday, as a matter of fact. You know, when the Hopis received their teachings, when the Mayans received their teachings, when White Buffalo Calf Woman came to the Northern Plains people, you know, that came through that experience of Christ consciousness before it manifested into physical reality. And so it's all, you know, there's no difference. And at the root of it, it's all the same thing. And that's, you know, that's the beauty of it. And that, so to me, that's what shamanism is. It's not, you know, you have to do a journey, you have to connect with a helping spirit, you have to, no, it's far more broad than that. You know, it's the first spiritual path humans have ever experienced. You know,
yeah. In my other show that I do weekly, Paranormal UK mm-hmm. Radio, we talk about. We just had a guest that was on last night and talking about the evolution of mankind, and discussing about how spiritualism and looking at things from a spiritual perspective, or mm-hmm. a shamanic perspective, may have first started. And one of my questions from an analytical standpoint is, you know, how would, if like the animals, people living back then dealing with the everyday natural world, what would prod them and provoke them to start looking and thinking that there is something beyond? Is it simply that from from an anthropology standpoint, they think if, because people who have died, they don't want to let go of it. They still think that maybe they still live on somewhere and that, or maybe they're actually connected in a way that we just, in, as a modern society, are still ignorant about and have connections to those other realms, those other worlds, and to the broader reality, and I put reality in air quotes, that, that surrounds us.
Well, think of this for a minute. You know, what is it about animals that when they look at each other or when we look at them, there is already an innate knowing that it's the eyes that you look to? Why doesn't, for instance, why doesn't a dog, when they come into a room and want to look at another dog, why don't they look at the tail or the feet or the, you know, they always look at the eyes. And my hunch is that as we evolved into, you know, I'm picturing, you know, those evolution trees where you start out with, I don't know, an amoeba or something, and it ends up, you know, all these branches of, you know, people, dogs, cats. Okay. Somewhere along the line, we learned that, you know, the eye is the window of the soul, and that's where we connect. And there's not one animal on the face of this planet, be it a fish or whatever, that when we look at it and it looks at us, it's the eyes that we're connecting with. And that takes us into a whole different. Is your phone beeping?
Yes, it is. We're getting that.
You know what that is? That's the new, the Trump call.
Yep, the presidential test system.
Oh, we were here to hear it.
Yes, and we got it recorded for posterity.
There it is. Okay, but anyway, you know, that's where we connect, and I think that as maybe many, many years ago, thousands of years ago, hundreds of years ago, whatever, that we could communicate by that contact. And maybe as we, I don't know, our needs changed or whatever, we lost that contact, but we still look in the eyes. You know, it's still there.
Well, I know some dogs also, I know my dog also likes to go for other dogs' butts, and they smell there because, but then of course that's part of, with their olfactory senses and the noses and how they recognize things. But yes,
that's
otherwise.
We just communicate words.
Yeah. I mean, my dog's laying down here right now and he's just looking up at me, and of course he looks right to the eyes. So they do make that connection.
Yeah. And how would they have known to do that if there wasn't something already, spirit to spirit, if there wasn't something already there?
Now, you know. Now, you also, as a shamanic practitioner, you perform shamanic healing. And, you know, there are different levels for shamanic healing, everything from, you know, healing with lights and colors, extraction, soul retrieval. But the one that and one of the reasons why I wanted you on today to talk about that, a lot of people aren't aware of. In fact, I know that there are a lot of practitioners who train that are afraid to take this class, to learn about compassionate depossession.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, and I just to explain it to our listeners, when you hear the word depossession, I think that's partly part of our unfortunate Western philosophy, you know, with pop culture and media, is you hear the word possession and you automatically think, oh my God, we're talking about devil possession or demonic possession. And that's not what we're dealing with. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you learned about and how you go about with training others on compassionate depossession, what it really means.
Yeah. Well, first, it's not exorcism. You know, the Roman Church does exorcism, and I don't. One thing I tell, and you probably heard this over and over again last year, you don't want to get into a pissing contest with a disembodied spirit because you will always lose. you know, they just have access to too much information that we don't. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, the whole concept of possession or depossession or whatever really is based on the awareness that there is no death. There's the dropping of the body. There's the transition from physical form to non-physical form, but the spirit never dies. And what happens sometimes is that when the spirit drops the body, leaves the body, or is yanked from the body, sometimes it doesn't really finish its journey. It doesn't finish its transition. And so it can be still in the middle world and not able. Sometimes they don't even know that they don't have a body because their memory creates a body for them. Or they will possess someone, a physical body, so that they can experience that physicality to continue, you know, experiencing themselves as alive. And so the practitioner is called in when somebody's, you know, believing that they have a possessing spirit. And we can talk about what that feels like, but the practitioner is then called in to help that spirit, one, recognize that it's in somebody else's body, but two, to recognize that it has not finished its own transition, and then three, to help that transition take place. So it's really based, it's based in compassion, not in adversarial confrontation.
Right. And yeah. But so, and just for clarification again, for the, mm-hmm. the audience, so it's possible for a human spirit, someone who has not crossed over to the other side for whatever reason, that they could attach themselves and mm-hmm. not exactly possess, but just attach themselves and influence or kind of live off of, almost leeching off of another person to kind of still continue to live life or experience, the physical?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Possession, and I use that right after you said there's no possession, but, you know, possession doesn't have to be an incomplete immersion into somebody else's body. It can be, like you're describing, an attachment. As long as it's in our energy field, that can be, you know, it can be an attachment. And I'll give an example. I trained with Betsy Bergstrom in Seattle, and in one of our sessions, one of the workshops I was at, we were depossessing one another. And I had a 2-year-old that had attached herself, she identified as female, attached herself to my shoulder. And she was not penetrating my physical form, but she had absolutely penetrated my energy form. And, you know, we're very bright on the other side. There's a movie called The Shack, excellent movie, but there's one scene in there where, the character of God or goddess or whatever you call that ultimate divinity, wants to show the main character, what does God see when he or she looks at humans? And the film captured it perfectly, but all of these light beings came walking through the field, and it was all these humans, but through the eyes of divinity, they were just light beings. And so from the other side, we're very warm, we're very bright. Those of us who are in healing practices or doing spiritual work are very, very bright. And there's so many beings out there that what they're looking for is warmth and comfort. And so they attach themselves to these warm, fuzzy, you know, light beings, us. And it can become problematic, but not to them. You know, they're just looking for love and looking for warmth and looking for safety and comfort. Yeah, like this little two-year-old. Come to find out, this was the result of an automobile accident. I happened to be moving through that area where that accident occurred. I was warm and fuzzy on the other side, and boom, this little spirit came, and that's all she was looking for. And so we helped her move into what I call it moving into the light, but really finishing her transition so that she could continue her spiritual evolution. And we went on. And my shoulder felt better after that, you know.
Well, I remember when I was going through training with Jim and Roxanne at Sacred Hope mm-hmm. Ministry, one thing that they said that relates to this always stuck out to me. They talk about how, you know, let's say you have somebody who is an alcoholic in life and they've died and they still crave that sensation. They haven't moved mm-hmm. on. They may attach themselves to somebody else to continue to experience. And Roxanne always had this saying that, you know, when you go out and drink, the first two drinks are for you. But if any mm-hmm. other drink you have after that, you're drinking for somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of like being used and influenced by this attaching spirit to continue to live vicariously through you.
That's the assuming that you have that spirit attached to you. But yes, you're absolutely right. You know, when people die, how they move through that transition really is determined a lot by how they were taught about the unseen world. And for instance, a lot of more rigid Christians believe that anything that's unseen is evil. And so can you imagine, you know, you're driving down the road and all of a sudden, boom, you're out of your body. You know, maybe somebody broadsided you, whatever it happened to be, but boom, you're out of your body and your belief system kicks in. That says, oh my God, everything in the unseen world is evil. Well, the very angels that come to help with that transition are going to appear like demons. Because that's the belief system that person carries into that experience. People that don't fear death and people that have an understanding of the infinite and ultimate compassion and love of the divine don't experience that because they know. They know, and they don't experience that. But there are some that do. Sometimes if someone is yanked out of their body and they haven't had the time to prepare for that departure, they don't realize that they're dead. And so, yes, they do carry some of those impulses that the immediate out-of-bodied spirit, you know, they do carry those impulses, and all of a sudden they're craving a cigarette or they're craving a, dare I say it, beer. And then they find somebody that is engaging in that behavior, and like I said, warm and fuzzy, in they go. You know, I want to experience this drink, so I'm going to possess this body. And it's not, I don't think it's an intention on the part of the spirit to actually possess. There are some spirits out there that's what they believe their life job is to do. But just like with addiction, it's just wanting that, craving that. And so they enter these bodies that are drinking or whatever. And they can continue that behavior. And then being in a denser energy field, like a physical body, they don't have the opportunity then for their own spirit bodies to lighten so that they can move into the light. So they're stuck there. And then on the physical side, you know, the friends are seeing this person go downhill very quickly. Their behaviors might change, their attitudes might change, sometimes even their speech may change and take on the characteristics of the possessing spirit. And then, you know, then they get the message, you know, you're not yourself. Yeah. And then hopefully at some point they seek out someone who can do an assessment and say, well, you know, you do have a spirit that's occupying your physical and spiritual form. So let's help that move on. Yeah. Sometimes in hospitals, this is interesting. I always thought that there should be a shamanic practitioner in every hospital because, you know, when we're under anesthesia, all of our boundaries fade away temporarily. And there are a lot of people who have died in hospitals tragically and quickly, and they're wandering around looking for warmth and comfort. You know, and there's this vulnerable life form on the operating table. Oh, I'll go. You know, of course, all they're seeing is this white, fuzzy thing. So they'll go and possess that body. And that's why, you know, a lot of times, I don't know if you've heard these stories. You know, people come home from the hospital and they're different. You know,
oh, yes.
I can, you know, the wife might say, you know, ever since my husband went in for surgery, he's not been the same, you know, and you know, stories like that. Well, that could be one of the reasons why.
Now, that's an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. Now, I've also heard stories of people who have had accidents or maybe go into comas or whatnot, and then when mm-hmm. they come out of it, they have either a different personality or maybe they're able to speak a language that they didn't speak previously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, in the past, I know a lot of researchers would say, oh, well, you know, maybe that's what they're picking up as a past life memory. But now it's making me wonder, in some cases, at least, if it's not an influence of if they were in a coma and in that unconscious state, maybe something else may have attached itself to them.
Who knows? It may have. Or given, you know, downloaded information. I was reading an article once. This guy went in for a routine procedure, ended up in a coma for some days, and finally came home, and they had a piano, and he sat down and was playing Mozart. And, you know, at a level far more involved than what he ever could before. And it was all just by ear. You know, somehow he got that information while he was under, and who knows, you know, who knows. But those things do happen, and it should not be a source of fear in people. It's just part of the universe that we inhabit. You know, there is the seen with our eyes and the unseen that our eyes can't see. And that's just all normal stuff.
Well, let me ask this, and I'm sure people would be wanting to know this. How often do you think that happens, where somebody may have a human spiritual attachment to them and would require a depossession? I mean, is it fairly common, or is it more uncommon than not?
It's more common than it needs to be. But then again, we've had more wars where people are yanked out of the bodies. We have more accidents, more overdoses, more shootings. You know, there are so many reasons why people are not dying a natural death. I suspect that it's probably more now than it ever has been, but I don't think I don't think everybody walking down the street has a possessing spirit. You know, I don't believe that. I used to, when I would teach it years ago, I came in to class with the assumption that everybody has a possessing spirit, and I've long since dropped that notion. And that's why, you know, like in the class last year, you know, we talk about, activating and what it might feel like, you know, if there might be a possessing spirit. And if so, let's do that. Let's work on that. But it's not an assumption that I make. And sometimes people will call me and say, you know, I do a lot of work over the phone. I will not do depossessions unless I'm with the person physically. But we do a lot of consultation over the phone. And, you know, they might say, well, I feel like I'm possessed. And in talking with the person, it really isn't a possession. It's just something else that we need to work on. Mm-hmm. But remember, we're in a culture that tries to find the blame out there somewhere. And so the easiest thing, if something's going wrong in my life, the easiest thing is, well, maybe I'm possessed. You know, maybe there's something out there that is the problem, you know, instead of the inner work that I need to do.
Right. And as a paranormal investigator myself, in dealing with people, especially here in the United States, where demons and possession and the ultimate fear that is crammed down our throats, you know, is all the rage right now, where if you go over to the UK or in Europe, they don't think along those terms. Not the way we do, no.
Oh, that's interesting.
They don't look at every time they have, they believe in spirits. They believe it's part of their culture. They believe a house may have spirits, but they don't ever look at anything as in dealing with something demonic. We're here in America, especially thanks to some of the television shows, it seems to be all demons all the time.
Exactly.
And you know, so again, people, just there's that ignorance based on fear, and of course fear sells. That's what they do on the TV shows, having been on a couple of them myself, I know.
Yeah.
And they you know, it just causes this misunderstanding. Now, when we did the class last year and I first started learning from you on deep possession, when we found out that one of the people in the class actually had an attachment and you worked with them through it. And again, I keep the details minimal because this person's privacy.
Right.
But to watch it in action was, and at the end of it, not only could you feel the energy in the room shift, but the emotions and how beautiful it was, it really was a beautiful experience.
It's an incredible healing. You know, we're all on a spiritual path, and depending on your belief system, we're on a spiritual path through many, many lifetimes and many, many different experiences. And when a soul gets stuck and isn't able to continue that journey, boy, when that freedom comes and they move into what I call the light, it's an incredibly beautiful moment, because now they can actually continue their spiritual evolution and become, you know, the beings that they're intended to be. And
well, and again, that's the aspect of compassionate deep possession that people don't understand, and even people in the shamanic community who are learning to be practitioners. I remember in the beginning that there was a majority of the people in my class who were afraid to take the class. They go, I don't know, I don't think I want to do that, you know, because they're brainwashed by society to look at the negative aspects of it. And the end result is more of having a conversation with the person, having that spirit's essence come forward, and convincing them to move on and cross over, and having the help come from the other side to help assist them with it.
Well, it's you know, as we know in our own lives, our belief systems kind of dictate what level of energy we're working with, right? If I have a terrible self-image, or if I have a terrible image of everybody around me or the world or whatever, you know, that puts me in a denser energetic field. And I can't move on. And it's the same thing in the spirit world. You know, that the belief system that spirit has, if that soul has been told from an early age in this lifetime or another lifetime or whatever, if the message that little spirit receives is that you're a bad person and the only thing you're good for is to cause misery. And how many kids hear that message today? You'll never be good. You're a problem. You're trouble. I'm going to call, you know, and they receive these messages. And then when they cross over, because they're in that denser energy field through life, they can't perceive that the angelic realm is there to help them move on, and they get stuck. And then they go lifetime, you know, they find if I'm given the message that all I'm good for is to cause trouble, I'm going to go cause trouble because that's what I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get these spirits that are out there causing trouble, not because there's something inherently evil about them. It's because somewhere along the line, they have come to believe that that's their job.
Yeah, and I even look at the terms good and evil being more man-made constructs anyway. I mean, there are certain positive and negative types of energy, but I always revert back to the natural world and even look at the animal world, where if you really take a look at nature, there is no evil in nature. There is no evil, there is no good, there just is.
That's a good point, yeah.
I mean the cheetah eating the gazelle might think the cheetah is evil for killing it and eating it, but that's a matter of perspective. Where the cheetah is surviving and raising its family and its young and training people and moving forward at that point.
And looking at it, you know, take it a step further too, the cheetah is giving the gazelle the opportunity to feed multiple species. The buzzards, the ants, that whole circle of life continues. It's one's not better than the other. The eater is not any better than the eaten.
No.
Because it all provides, you know, for the circle of life, the web of life. Yeah.
Well, you know, is the mosquito evil for wanting to suck your blood and take off and you get nothing out of it? It's a parasitic relationship, and yet it's doing what it needs to do to survive.
Right.
You know, I still want to smack them if I see one on me, but at the same time, it's you're dealing with other living creatures just doing what they're designed to do.
You would bring up mosquitoes. But you're absolutely right. They have their place in the scheme of things, you know, in the majesty of creation. Everything has a place. There is no accident, you know. Everything has a place. We're the ones that decide, is that place acceptable or not? And, you know, if you watch how nature feeds on one another. There is a moment, and I have not seen this not happen. There is a moment in that kill event, and that be killed event. There is a moment where there's an understanding, and everything is okay. And you know, we were on the Navajo Reservation, Navajo Nation, for about 5 years. And one of the families brought one of their sheep over. They wanted to butcher it and use the church hall to kind of spread things out. And, you know, and we watched one member of the family. Typically in their culture, there's an uncle, and that's his role, is to do the actual butchering. And he talked with that sheep for quite a few moments. And the sheep was nervous. We were told that the sheep know when they're going to be slaughtered. And the sheep was that night was very disturbed and tried to get out of its pen and just made a lot of racket. But when that elder knelt down with that sheep and started talking to it, the sheep became very, very calm, and it was okay. And the reverence that he manifested in cutting the throat of that sheep, the sheep and he both knew that they were participating in something bigger than what we could see. And it was absolutely sacred and magical. And I really believe that at some level, when that cheetah is chasing that gazelle down, and yes, there's the game. I'm going to see if I can get away, and I'm going to see if I can get you. You know, there is that play, but there's some point when those teeth go into that neck that there's an understanding that we are participating in something greater than ourselves. And all of creation will benefit from this act. You know, that's the difference between kill and murder. You know, that's the difference between participating in the cycle of life from a place of sacredness.
See, that is a very profound statement for me. Mm-hmm. And it's something I think I needed to hear, too. Because when we try to reconcile, or I try to reconcile the times of, mm-hmm. you know, food, how we eat, what we eat, trying to eat healthier these days. And, but, you know, what we are, as we're omnivores, I know there's a lot of people choose to have a vegan lifestyle. They won't do animal products, and that's fine. That's for them. I enjoy meat, and at the same time, I also feel bad of where it comes from and how it's processed, and you know, how to look at that from a more shamanic perspective. And the way you just described it, it's more understandable, more magical, and peaceful, and with the understanding of this is that life process. Now, you know, humans have a hard time understanding it, because I know I'm compassionate. I live in the woods, so I have a lot of animals come through here, deer, bear, foxes. I had a raccoon on my porch the other night. And with these, you know, I grew up, my dad taught me how to hunt. And thankfully, my dad taught me very respectfully how to hunt, but it still was going out in a more Western style way of hunting and killing. Mm-hmm. And I learned more with some of the native aspects of it, with, you know, the respect that they have, and like you just mentioned with the Navajo elder talking with the sheep, doing that communication, that bonding and understanding, you know, before moving forward with the kill. It seems like a much healthier process to me.
Well, yeah, even with Western style hunting, you know, if you're hunting for food, you know, you can do a journey. This is where the shamanism comes in. You can do a journey to elk, for instance. We have a lot of elk around here, and people hunt elk. You can do a journey to elk, and in the journey, set the intention that you're going to encounter the elk that will come to you to give itself for your nourishment. And the nourishment of, you know, when you leave everything, you know, out there, the nourishment of other creatures. But you can journey to that elk and have that conversation, so that when that elk does come to you, you know, when we're hunting, we think we're the ones that go find it. Well, I have a feeling that, you know, I don't know if they get together on Twitter or not and say, okay, who's going to do it, you know? But, you know, you can have that conversation. And then when that elk appears, you have a relationship already established with that. And you can have that compassion and that mutual love for one another, that we are participating in something greater than just this. So that when you pull the trigger or pull the bow or however you do that hunt, you're doing it from a place that is sacred and not just, you know, sports. But yeah, there's some things you can, the whole idea for me, and this is just my way, but the whole idea of having the conversation, like I said earlier, there are a lot of spirits that don't even believe that they died, or have a belief system that's keeping them bound in the place that they're bound. The whole idea of the conversation is to help them realize that they're dead, but two, that they are working in a belief system that is not helpful for them. And that's why, you know, in the class, I sometimes I'll say, look at the body that you're in. Is that your body? And sometimes that's the first time they've really come to see that, no, it's not my body. And then it's like, oh, my God, what happened to my body, you know? And then there can be that conversation. It's just a way to engage that spirit in a change in what they're believing. What happened to your body? I don't know. Well, where was it last time you remember? It was in the car. What happened to the car? Well, somebody hit the car. You know, you can piece together that, and that helps the spirit. It's not for my own entertainment or the entertainment of the person that I'm working with, the physical person I'm working with. It's really, you know, when you sit down with a client that has a possessing spirit, when you start the depossession, then your client is that spirit. And so it's a matter of just talking with that spirit and helping it realize that the belief system that is sustaining it in that body is a denser belief system, and it doesn't work. And as their belief systems change, you know, I don't know if you remember, one of the questions was, do you see a light in your center or in your heart? And sometimes they'll say no, or it's very, very dim, but I can see a little flicker there. Well, as that conversation goes on, and they come to realize that, okay, I'm in somebody else's body. There's somebody here that's going to help me. I'm not. There's the angelic realm around me I'm starting to see. You know, all of a sudden they can start feeling a little safer. Well, that light's going to get bigger. And what that is telling me is that their vibration is rising. And the goal is to get it to rise to a point where it can no longer sustain itself in the physical form. It's too light to be bound by a physical body. And so they just naturally start to drift out. And if you remember, you know, I'll say to the physical person, do you feel it moving? And they'll say, yeah, I do. Okay, well, just let it continue to move. It's just, it can't do anything but that, you know. And then it gets to a point where it's so light that it can move into the next realm, into the light. But the conversation is, the goal of the conversation is to help it get to that point.
Fantastic.
You know, if I have a belief system that's not serving me, the best way to understand that is to talk about it. You know, well, and so that's the same principle. The only difference between a possessing spirit and me is that I have a body and they don't.
Right. True.
You know.
Well, we have run out of time.
That's the only difference,
Karen.
I think I said this in your class. You know, we were talking about the nature of, you know, demons and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, if I stub my toe, I'm not a happy camper and nobody wants to be around me for a little while. You know, same thing. That spirit was hurt, mm-hmm. and is suffering. And so let's alleviate the suffering and help it, you know, move into a place where it can experience being truly what it's meant to be.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Karen, unfortunately, we've run out of time, and we definitely could have kept going on this one. So,
well, let's do this again.
Definitely, definitely. I want to thank you so much for coming on. We're talking with Karen Furr. If you want to learn more about Karen, you could go to her website at spiritdrum.org. She also is a shamanic healer, and she has ways to contact her there. And is there anywhere else that people can find you?
Actually, my contact information is on that website. But also, I just want to say, if this has been troubling for anyone, I really encourage you, if you have any questions, my contact information is on the website. Please give me a call or email me, and I'll try to answer your questions. Because I know this is, you know, this topic is kind of strange for some people, but just don't be afraid of it. But if something's coming up, just give me a call or let me know, and I'll see if I can answer your questions.
Great. Well, Karen, again, thank you, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so have a great evening, and we'll talk with you all soon.